Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, my name is Mackenzie. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Social Work Now. Today we have our guest, Rachel. Rachel is currently working towards her master's degree in social work at SUNY Albany School of Social Welfare. Her current internship is at the Ellis Hospital in the Adolescent Inpatient Mental Health Unit. Rachel, are you with us?
I am.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So today the topic that we're going to be covering is the adolescent inpatient psychiatric hospitalizations. Can you tell us a little bit about that and, you know, what are the typical reasons why adolescents end up in the psychiatric hospitalizations?
There's typically two main reasons why an adolescent would be admitted to inpatient psych unit. The main reason is typically suicidal ideation, so thoughts of wanting to hurt themselves, or suicide attempts, so things such as attempting to hang themselves or taking an overdose of medication. And the second most common reason for admission is homicidal ideation, so thoughts of wanting to hurt others, you know, fantasizing about killing people, things of that nature.
Well, it's unfortunate to hear that that is prevalent among children and adolescents that are so young, but it's great that there are social workers in areas like Ellis Hospital and these units that they can go and seek help. And, you know, I can only imagine that it's very scary for both themselves and their caretakers or their parents. Could you give us some of the most common concerns upon admission to the unit, what parents and the adolescents who are faced with these problems might be going through at this time?
Absolutely. It is a very scary process for both the adolescent who's being admitted as well as their caretakers, whether that's their parents or foster parents or whoever it might be. It can be very scary. Most common concerns would definitely be whether or not the child is going to be safe on the unit and what are they really going to be able to benefit from. You know, for a child who is really actively suicidal, it's hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel. And so oftentimes parents are concerned about what are we going to be able to do inpatient that wouldn't be able to be done outpatient. I would say that's the most common concern. Other than that, you know, whether their child is going to be safe on the unit, like I said, or, you know, what's going to happen when they're discharged. That's also always a very common concern.
Definitely. I can imagine how that would be a little bit uneasy for a parent to just hand their child over to one of these units. And when they have to do that, what is the typical length of stay for an adolescent in one of these units?
It absolutely varies depending on the child and depending on the situation that led them to come to the hospital. But our average length of stay is from 5 to 7 days. Now, if someone is still feeling suicidal at that time, then obviously we'd be extending their stay until that risk has diminished. But like I said, our typical length of stay is about a week.
Right. Okay, so during that week stay, what is the process, the treatment process that they go through like?
When a child is admitted to the unit, they're assigned a psychiatrist, an adolescent psychiatrist, as well as a social worker. So every single day while the child is in the hospital, they meet with the psychiatrist and the social worker together to discuss medications, to discuss how they're feeling, you know, if there's been any changes in their mood or the thoughts that they've been having that led them to come into the hospital. And from there, on each unit, there are a numerous amount of groups that take place that the adolescent can participate in, and that ranges from anything from a social work group to talk about feelings and to talk about stress management to fun groups to kind of ease the children's anxiety and the pressure of getting well. So there's a music group, and there can be different recreation groups, some exercise groups, and just a variety of different things to help with the treatment process.
That's great, and that's great to hear that, you know, these children aren't alone when they go in here, and there's really a team of people working together to make sure that the treatment that they are receiving is well handled. So, you know, at the end of this treatment, when they've gone through the whole process at the end of this 5 to 7 days, how does the hospital or these units determine when an adolescent is ready for discharge? If they reach the 7 days and they feel like they're not ready to go yet, how are those decisions made?
Well, planning for discharge is something that starts at day one. So we typically, when a child comes into the unit, like I said, they do to the day-to-day things. And also, the parent or the guardian of the child also comes in to meet with the treatment team, which is the doctor and the social worker, to discuss what's going on at home, what they're seeing with the child, and what changes they're looking for. So it's a very involved process, discussing discharge. That's something that the doctor has to sign off on, but the social worker, the family, and the child all need to feel ready for. So typically, it's a decision that the child will, you know, give some insight into what they think, and then the ultimate decision is really made by the treatment team with the support of the parent or the guardian.
That's great. That's great to hear that, you know, the child also has a say in it, because I can imagine that it would be scary to be put in one of these situations and feel like you have no control over your life or your setting or even your mind sometimes. And when someone's very young, I can imagine that would be a very scary thing. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that it's definitely very important as part of the treatment process to keep the adolescent involved, to keep the parent involved, and to make sure that everyone's concerns and everyone's fears are being addressed. So that way it's a very cohesive process, so no one's being discharged from the hospital without complete safety. Safety is the number one concern when considering discharge from a hospital, as well as, you know, admission to the hospital. If someone's not being safe, then they're not going to be leaving the hospital. So I just wanted to make that point of that it's not just the doctor making that decision. It's very cohesive between, like I said, the adolescent, the caregivers, and the treatment team.
Right, definitely. Thank you for adding that point. I think it's definitely a good thing for both the child who's receiving treatment and the parent, everybody to be in the know. And, you know, sometimes with topics like this, I know some certain specific details about treatment and, you know, discharge and everything that goes along with that can sometimes tend to be taboo. So I think the more that the doctors and the parents and the guardians and the adolescent are willing to just have an open and revealing conversation about it, the easier that the process would be. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think that, like you said, the taboo or the stigmatized subject of psychiatric issues, having conversations like this really helps take that away a little bit, and it makes it a little bit more real. People can understand what causes someone to go into the hospital and what are they getting out of being in the hospital and are they crazy, things like that. Understanding that these are real people with real concerns, and they're going into the hospital to get help, and they're coming out different. You know, they're coming out more safe, they're coming out more confident, and I think that helps people understand what's really going on.
Definitely, definitely. So going off of what happens after they leave, what is that exact process? How does the follow-up happen? You know, do patients ever end up back in the hospital? What is that process like?
Well, the typical discharge planning process, like I said, it starts from day one. So we're talking to the providers that are outpatient, so whether it's therapists or psychiatrists outside of the hospital, we're talking with them to see what their input is regarding the hospitalization, the discharge, and things that need to be worked on while they're in the hospital. And when we determine that an adolescent is ready for discharge, all appointments with outpatient providers, whether they had them before they came into the hospital or not, are made. So typically, we're setting up adolescents with therapists, with people to manage their meds, with psychiatrists. If they need substance abuse counseling, or if they need, you know, anything that they could possibly imagine, whatever it is that, you know, they're going to need help with on the outside that we've determined, we set up those appointments. So that way, upon discharge, the adolescent and the provider and the parents, excuse me, don't have anything to really worry about except getting them to the appointment. Because as I'm sure you could understand, discharge is overwhelming as well. You're bringing home a child who just tried to kill themselves or just tried, you know, was threatening to kill you. So it can be a scary process bringing the child back home, and that just makes it a little bit easier for everyone involved. So that's typically what happens at discharge. And your question about whether or not kids come back into the hospital, unfortunately, yes, that happens all the time. It doesn't happen with every child, but someone who is feeling suicidal might feel that way again. And at the age adolescents are, it takes a while to learn new coping skills, so their immediate resolution is to hurt themselves. You know, if something's going wrong, if something's not perfect, that's their coping skill. So what we're doing in the hospital is trying to teach them new coping skills, teach them new ways to handle this life. Recurrent hospitalization isn't something that happens. And if it does happen again, you know, so it's not a constant revolving door for them.
Absolutely. You know, and that makes sense for a child to be going in there. I'm sure it's comforting to have a plan to leave and not feel like they're trapped in there, knowing what they're going to do outside on the real world and how to take the tools that they learn in the hospital and implement them in their daily lives. I'm sure that's comforting for not only them, but their caregivers and the treatment facilities as well, to know that everybody's
absolutely
on board for the same thing from day one. So that's awesome. That's good to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely, it's a seamless process, and I think that's the plan on the inpatient hospital's part, to make sure that they're going out with all the tools that they need to be successful back in the community so they don't end up back in the hospital, because that's our ultimate goal, is to reintroduce them to the community and make sure that they're going to be able to be successful.
Absolutely. Well, Rachel, unfortunately we're out of time today, but I would like to thank you very, very much for, again, joining our show.
Thank you, Mackenzie. It was great being on. I'm glad we got to talk.
Thank you. Likewise. And like I said last time, if anybody has any questions, concerns for themselves, their peers, their family members, please don't hesitate to give any of the hotlines, the suicide hotlines, either at the University of Albany or at Ellis Hospital, a call, and someone will be happy to assist you right away. That's all the time we have today. Rachel, thanks again. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you. Bye now.
Bye.